Well, I'm here with Levi Lusco. And Levi, you're one of my dear friends. I've known you. I saw you actually when you were like a week old. That's when I first met you.
I don't remember that for some reason.
You do. Of course you do. You were in your dad's arms, and you were living in Colorado at the time. But tell me, first of all, about your name, Levi. I know it's not that you're named after jeans, but you're named after somebody in the Bible. Was that meaningful to you growing up?
Sure. Well, my name's Levi Aaron Lusco, so I think just about everything about my name possibly could point towards my parents' love for God, the priestly tribe, Aaron the first priest, and the idea of my parents, I know, had a hope that I would always follow God and represent Him to people. So I've always loved my name.
I remember watching you grow up, and I know all your siblings as well. And I remember telling your dad, who worked here on staff for many years, I said, Chip, there's one of your kids that I'm worried about, and that's Levi. You know, you were always smart and witty, and I would say your mouth could have gotten you in trouble at times, and you kind of always wanted to push the envelope. And but all of that has been, I would say, redeemed, or it serves you well, because there's an edge, a sanctified edge to your ministry that is really refreshing. When you were growing up and you're a pastor's son, what was that like? Did you feel pressure, first of all?
Well, I can definitely say all the things you're talking about, the mouth getting me in trouble and having, you know, all of those things were true. I mean, I got in trouble so much in school, and I was always getting detentions, talking too much, and I feel like my mouth was always operated faster than my brain, and, you know, I didn't have a filter always on what I would say, and that didn't help. But, you know, like you mentioned, those things, I think, sanctified, what they say, an unguarded strength can become a double weakness, and so once the Holy Spirit was involved in my life, and I began to be harnessed in that way instead of just a bright, brilliant light, those things started to become a little more focused, like a laser, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been a journey and a process of sanctification, of course. And as far as growing up in a pastor's home, I loved it. I mean, I loved growing up in my dad's church plant in Colorado. As he came onto your staff and was working for you, coming up to Albuquerque and being a part of the church, I love it. My fondest memories, my earliest memories, almost all of my memories involve church, and I love that. I remember sitting in parked cars at cemeteries waiting for my dad to finish a funeral or a hospital visit, lobby, you know, and I loved it. I remember even as a little boy in Calvary of Albuquerque Sanctuary, when my dad would, you know, lock up the building after a midweek service or whatever, he would send me to go run and turn off the lights. And so I would always save the sanctuary for last. But I remember before I would shut the lights off, I would always stand on the stage, and I sometimes would lift myself up onto your enormous pulpit and prop myself up on my elbows and deliver pretend sermons to nobody in that giant sanctuary.
That's great.
And
I never knew that.
Even then, I could sense, you know, it's part of what God had put me on this earth for.
Wow. It's almost like what David said, I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord. And boy, you got promoted, though. You worked with me here at Albuquerque, and then you worked with me on staff in California, and you were the pastor of all the youth ministries. So you've worked in churches, not only grown up in them. And so you've been around church a long time. So Levi, kind of cut to the chase and help us with something. What does the church need? Being around churches all your life, what have you noticed? What are some of the typical ruts that Christians or churches get themselves into?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, you can be inoculated to the truth by proximity. I think growing up around church, I sort of had a false sense of security of my own salvation, just because I had always known about God. I probably, had at different points in my life said the sinner's prayer like about 3 million times, but proximity to doesn't mean the same thing as participation in. And for me, I came to a place where I realized just before my freshman year of high school that though I was extraordinarily religious and attending church and knew so much, I knew most of my Sunday school teachers about the Bible stories, I'd be constantly correcting them and then getting into trouble for it. But then I realized that I was always at church, always a part of the youth group, leading in the youth group, but I truly had never turned from my sin and turned to follow Christ, even though I had even made commitments at times at campfires and whatever. And so there came a day where I bowed my knee to Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior and turned from my sin and chose to follow him and not just be knowing about God, but to know God. And I feel like, you know, for maybe my parents' generation, your generation, where you guys were, you know, this hippie culture, smoking pot and whatever, and you guys knew full well that stuff didn't satisfy, you turn from it. There's another generation coming up behind you. We've grown up in the church. We've been told by you and our parents and our teachers, sin is not good, but we're kind of suspicious because our friends and what we see on TV, it seems like there sure is some fun in it. And so there came a season for me of a double life and doing things that were wrong, but then at the same time still going to church and masquerading as a believer. And so I had to, you know, kind of come to that place of realizing, am I really going to follow Christ or is it just going to be my parents' religion?
You're a communicator, Levi. It's evident to everyone who's hearing you now and people who hear you on the radio and at your church. When I think of your family, I think of communications. Your father oversaw the communications of this ministry for many years. Your brother Daniel's a filmmaker and communicates that way. Your other brother Jesse is an evangelist. And you're a communicator as a Bible teacher and as an evangelist on many levels. How do you communicate to today's generation? And is it different than communicating to other generations?
You know, it's funny. I don't know that it necessarily is. I think one of the keys when you communicate is to really just be yourself. I think people have a sixth sense for trying to be relevant and trying to be current and be hip and be slick. And when you're trying to be something you're not, I think one of the keys is just to be who you are and to be comfortable in your own skin and who God's made you to be, but not to be afraid to go with that and to utilize things that interest you, you know, in movies you've seen or cultural pop culture references that are funny to you. I think one of the biggest things is not to try too hard and not to be something you're not, but as you're communicating with people to utilize daily life. I mean, you look at the New Testament and, you know, the analogies Jesus used, they made sense to those who heard them. I mean, the parable of the prodigal son, the grapes and the tares and the wheat and the goats, they were spoken to an agricultural society. So today, you know, for us, we have to not be afraid to utilize the things that are happening in the world around us. I mean, I was just reading in the news about a Hollywood writer who committed suicide by drinking antifreeze mixed with Gatorade and left a suicide note on Twitter, the first ever that I'm aware of,
Wow. Someone
who posted their suicide note, you know, via a tweet. And so to be able to use that and to be able to speak to our culture and say, hey, look, here's a guy who's known, here's a guy who had access to, you know, celebrities and money and parties, and yet he was unhappy. He said in his final parting words, he just couldn't be miserable anymore. And so when you use an example like that and then speak to it from the Bible and show that that's nothing new, because Solomon said vanity, vanity, thousands of years previously, but they still ring true today in our newspaper headlines, it grabs people's attention because it's the world that they're living in, you know?
Yeah, you have good biblical precedent for doing, like you said, with Paul or Jesus. You know, Levi, you're in Montana. You've been there for 5 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 5 years. It's just now.
And I remember when you went out there. What really is amazing is you went out there completely by faith, you and your wife, Jenny. You went out there to see what the Lord would do. Tell us a little bit about your journey, first of all, what that was like going out there, starting from scratch in a community you really didn't know much about. You just knew somebody from there, and then watching the Lord start to work.
You know, it's funny you mentioned it. I mean, 5 years has gone by so fast, but a lot's happened, and it's hard to believe it hasn't been longer than that in some ways. We didn't even know anybody who lived here. We knew someone who lived in California who vacationed here and had a second house here, and yet we had sort of a restlessness in our spirits. I had always grown up hearing about you and Pastor Raul Reese and Pastor Greg Laurie and all these other great men of God of faith who had gone out and ventured these trails and planted these churches, and I just desired to go out and see nothing become something and to see God work. And if God didn't show up, it would definitely fail. And so that was always kind of in the background. And so it kind of came to a point where at California, we sat there saying, look, if not now, when? It's never going to get any easier. We're going to buy a house. Our family's going to grow more. If not now, let's just do this thing, you know? And so we said, let's pray about where God would have us to go. And we looked at some options. We were praying about Ladera Ranch, California, mm-hmm. Dana Point, California. And we just were kind of praying through some different things. And around that time, as we were praying, different things started opening up again. You called and asked me to come back on staff at Calvary Albuquerque. Pastor Greg Laurie called, asked me to come work for him at Harvest, and I was just more confused than ever. But in the back of my mind, there was this random little thing in Montana where someone who had a heart to see God move up here said to me, you should plant a church in Montana. And for some reason, Skip, I could not get that out of my head. And so my wife and I just randomly decided to move to a city 60 miles from Canada in the dead of winter, in a place where people warned me cows die because of exposure, where there's hardly any people, and a place where I'm actually, quite frankly, a terrible fit. I mean, I make no sense here. I don't like hunting. I don't like the rodeo. I prefer a hot coffee and a solid internet connection to being in the woods. And yet God moved us to the fourth largest state, and yet we just wanted to see God move in power.
Hmm. So you've been there 5 years. When you were there at first, give us just a little bit of what it was like the first year you were there.
Sure. Well, it was hard. We pulled into town, and we had, on the way here, hit a huge snowstorm. We left California at 78 degrees. We're wearing flip-flops and shorts, and we get to Salt Lake City, and a freak storm hits, and we had to stop and get snow tires. We had no room in our car. The moving truck was well ahead of us, so we had no way to put our other tires away, so we just left them there at the Costco and took our snow tires on. We get to town, and that week it's like negative 15 below. Our Gatorade freezes in between drinks unpacking the moving truck, and we are looking at each other going, what on earth have we done? And we had access to a room. A godly man had made available a room above an old bar that we could use for a year for $1. And so we started inviting people to come to a Bible study. And the first week, 14 people show up. We taught the Bible. Next week, 24 people come. We keep doing this, just teaching the Bible. A few friends that I had served with from your church and from other churches chose to randomly come up too. And so they start coming. The team gets built up a little bit. And by 2 months in, we had started to see a few people make decisions for Christ, and that was really where the fire started to get lit. Once non-believers were coming to know Christ, they were so zealous to bring other people that they knew to come to know Jesus as well. And by 3 months in, we had 100 people coming. A year, on our one-year birthday, we moved into an abandoned movie theater, and the church went from 200 to 400 people overnight.
Wow.
And from there, it's just been that kind of skiing in front of an avalanche kind of a feeling where, at this point, we've seen over 3,000 people come to Christ, and we've had 5,000 people show up at church on a Sunday. And it's just been a move of God's Spirit that we just give Him all the glory for.
So being up there for 5 years, you've also done something a little bit differently than just church. And people listening, they think here's a pastor who planted a church, and they've maybe heard stories like that before. But your ministry is a little bit different in that there's this whole other generation younger than you that you've sought to reach out to once a month on Wednesday nights with an interesting thing called Skull Church. First of all, tell us why you chose that name, and then what is that?
Well, we sacrifice animals at Skull Church. No, I'm just kidding. That's the buzz going around town.
Is that right? Was that true?
We sacrifice animals, and there's several other fun rumors too. But basically, as you know, as you taught me, as I learned how to love God and love His Word growing up in your church and have to give you honor for, you know, your amazing teaching gift. And as I teach the Bible each week, my church is being blessed by your teaching gift, which you invested in my heart and life and taking me under your wing. But as I went through the Gospel of Mark, seeing this place, the Skull Hill, Golgotha, Calvary, Cranium in the Latin that Jesus died at, wanting to articulate that news to a lost generation who's not into church, doesn't know God. And so we basically, it's kind of like a miniature little crusade outreach where every month we bring in a guest artist. We don't announce who they are, so no one ever knows. People call the church, who's coming to school church? We're like, hey, Jesus is, show up, be there, but get there early. The line forms around the block to get in, and we just give a very simple concert, little worship, and then we give a gospel message and call people to make a decision about Christ. And we're seeing God just really bless that. and people are coming to know him. The stories are heartbreaking of the addiction and the bondage and the hurt and the damage done to the gospel by churches that are teaching a different gospel of work-centered righteousness, and people are actually hearing about grace, and it's so amazing. And by we've had the opportunity once to take it to another city of Montana, and we're praying this year about more and more focusing on bringing school church events to other places, and so it's just been neat to watch God bless that.
You know, I've been to your fair town, and when I was there last time, I noticed a couple billboards that are like black with the skull and crossbones that says Skull Church. Have you gotten flack from that?
Yeah, we have, but it's the kind of thing that we're hoping to get a little bit of the buzz and the controversy. It's almost like if they're talking about it, it's a good thing because people will see the skull and church and like, what is that? And they'll Google it. We laugh so hard seeing our, because you can actually find out what people Google before they get to your site, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What is the church of the skull? What is the deal with skull church? What is evil about skull church? And the best thing that can happen is someone will find someone wearing a shirt or with a sticker and say, hey, what is the deal with skull church exactly?
Hmm.
And then they'll go, oh, I'd love to tell you. Jesus died at a place called this place of the skull. The most loving thing that ever has happened in human history took place at a place of death.
Hmm.
And he died for you. And it's a great opportunity to talk about it.
That's great, Levi. When you go to your church, you're in a theater. Well, I need to describe this to people. You have two theaters. You have the Strand and you have the Liberty Theater. These are kind of longstanding pieces of architecture that have been a part of Kalispell for years, and you've chosen to keep those names, and you use one as sort of your main capture place, and then you put it out to different other venues. Is that right?
Yeah. We have these two 100-year-old iconic theaters that are on the historic registry. I mean, Gone with the Wind showed here on its original release, you know what
wow.
I mean? And they're really cool and vibey. And they were both abandoned. They were sitting empty, not even on the market. We bought them from the owner who used to use them for film until a big, you know, 14-plex was built with 3D and all that stuff. And so they just sat empty, and they had deed restrictions on them where they could never become theaters again. So a dollar theater couldn't come in, or an old film company could never be a competing issue for that big business. Very intelligent, this guy, East Coast businessman who had done this. And we bought the theaters from him, and we said, hey, we don't show movies. We want to do a different presentation entirely. And we've renovated them, but we've kept their historic feel. And so like you mentioned, we preach at one, and I change which one I actually preach at in person. And the other one gets a high-def signal feed via fiber optics that we've run through the city. And then we also beam out to a satellite we have in Whitefish, Montana, at a movie theater. And then our newest is in Billings, Montana, 8 hours away, which is kind of a new venture of faith for us, where we now have that going in a campus there, which is the largest city in the state.
Tell us a little bit, though, how you have woven those two names of those iconic theaters, Strand and Liberty, into your purpose statement.
Absolutely. We, you know, it's funny, as you know, as you plan a church, you have to really decide who you're going to be and who God's called you to be. And as a pastor, you know, you obviously have laid out for you Acts 2:42, what the church is about, and yet God has given different gifts to the body and given different callings, I believe, to different churches. I mean, every church doesn't have their main passionate focus of, you know, feeding the poor or widows or of hospital visits, jail visits. Everyone's going to do a little bit of everything, but then you also start to get special into specialty stuff where you're going to feel a particular conviction. Calvary of Albuquerque, amazing, amazing radio ministry, all the different stations the connection goes out on. Not every church is going to feel the passion or the calling to follow God's will into radio or TV or, you know, more specialized in this thing or that. And we really felt like that one of the things that God had ingrained into us was this aggressive, dynamic outreach of looking to this next generation with the Skull Church and O2 experience. And so as we had bought these buildings, we were sensing that, and God gave us kind of the language from the buildings that we as a church are here to reach those stranded. Our first building is the Strand Theater in sin, with life and liberty in Christ, and the Liberty Theater is the 100-year-old name of the other venue. So those things kind of crystallize as our calling and our marching orders, which is, of course, just the Great Commission, of course, but to see those stranded in sin find life and liberty in Christ.
I think it's great the way you've done that, and people drive by and they see those signs kind of preserved and woven into your purpose statement. So all downtown is a witness the way you've woven them together.
It's been really special watching God work. Yeah.
I just want to kind of get your thoughts on church growth, because there's sort of a new idea, a new wave of it. We've even caught on to it. But, you know, typically, traditionally, when churches grow, they sort of think about one campus and they think about, well, we have a lot of people coming and multiple services. I guess we're going to have to build a bigger building. And there's other ways to do it. In fact, you've done it. You have a theater, then you bought another theater, then you use one in Whitefish miles away, and then hours away in another place. And the church is expanding, but you're using other campuses. Tell us about that whole ideology.
You know, honestly, part of it came out of necessity. I mean, I think it's like the necessity is the mother of invention thing. When we outgrew our facility, we genuinely, we were spilling, we had dangerous things happening. We had people, we had no more room, fire capacity, and literally firemen showing up, you know, making sure we weren't breaking it even more. And we had people in the summertime that would sit up in folding chairs onto the sidewalk, and we're in a downtown area, so they would fill the sidewalk up, we put another TV out, and then we had people even sitting in the street. And we had to put cones around them so cars weren't hitting them. And we're looking at this going, this is not okay, nor will this work in the wintertime when it's freezing. Mm. And so we didn't have the money or the budget to go build a large multiple-thousand-seat auditorium. But what we did find was a small venue that we could get, and we kind of looked at the thing, could we put the signal in here? Will people go to church if there's no pastor on stage, if it's just a screen? And then we started thinking about it. It's like, you know what? There's no reason why not. I mean, the power is not in the man, the power is in the message. And if Paul couldn't get to an area that he longed to go to geographically for whatever reason, he would send an epistle. You know, you're telling me that if Paul had a BlackBerry, he wouldn't have thumped out some of his letters on that? Or if he could send an iChat or a high-def screen, would he not have, I longed to go there and speak to you, would he not send a screen to go and to bring that message? And so we tried it as an experiment. And you know what we found? We found people were getting saved with no pastor physically present who was actually preaching. Now, we have, of course, campus pastors, people there to be hands and feet, but we were just overjoyed watching this happen. And, you know, I have this great story I always tell of this old guy who came, invited by a friend a long time ago, but then his wife left him, life started breaking down, and one Sunday he woke up out of a dead sleep saying, I need to go to church today. And he remembered hearing about this church, Fresh Life, so he shows up, sits down, and after worship, the screen comes down. And he said, what is this? And I come on the screen, and he said he remembers saying to himself, this is going to be the easiest sermon I ever slept through in my life, and the pastor won't even know I was sleeping. Well, as the message goes on, I made a statement to the effect of, we were teaching in Revelation, I said something like, look, if you won't live for Christ now, what makes you think you'd be willing to die for him then, when if you don't, you know, take the mark of the beast, you won't, you know, you'll killed, you know? And he remembers right then and there having just his blood run cold, and he realized he needed to give his life to Jesus. So I led everyone in a prayer to turn their hearts to Christ. He prayed that prayer loud and clear, and now he volunteers every single week cleaning the churches, and he's one of the most faithful people in our congregation.
Oh, man.
And it's just amazing to see God use technology and video to reach into someone's life, because it's all about his word, not about us.
That's a great story. Levi, I'm a church planner, and you are as well. We know what that's like, but I want you to talk to a young man or young men who might be listening who want to be in the ministry and they're considering this idea of planting a church. What would you say to them?
Run away. Don't do it. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I would say it's the extreme sports, you know, of following God, missions and going out and embarking on an entrepreneurial adventure of faith. It's wonderful. I would advise anyone who is thinking of doing it to not do it alone. I would really just encourage a team mentality. Jesus sent out people two by two. You see him with the team. Even when he couldn't take the 12, he took the 3. Paul was very careful as to who was on his team. You know, I want Barnabas, not John Mark. I want, you know, whatever it was. There was a team that went out. And I'm not saying it dogmatically. Of course, you didn't have a great team when you went to Albuquerque. But I think that it spares you a lot of the initial hardship. And I think it can actually it can actually make some of those early days a little bit easier. I would say those two things. But make sure you're called, you know, and then I would say right where you're at, make sure you are serving under your pastor and serving in your church as long as God has you there to the best of your ability with all you've got to learn all that you have until the day comes, you know, when he'll call you out. And until you do get called out, be where you are. Be there 100%. You know, I always made it my goal, though I knew one day I would get called to plant a church, to never view youth ministry, being an associate pastor, being even a teaching pastor as a stepping stone to something greater. The greater is where God has you today. So be where you are, fully where you are. And so I never would be planning or scheming or, you know, spending my time while I was working for you looking to come up with this plan of what I was going to go out and using company church resources to be working on this other sinister thing, you know. I tried to have a clean break, and when I knew God had moved me on, to make that clear and to not even expect for the church I was at or ask for them to take care of me. I was trying to be where I was at fully and supporting the vision of the pastor I was at the time. So I would give that those little pieces of random advice.
Great advice. Levi, so proud of you. So excited at what God is doing in your life. Are you even 30 years old yet?
Not yet. I'm 29, so I'm about to get old real quick here.
Yes, right. You'll be at that untrustworthy age of 30 and over.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're just so thankful for the way God is speaking through you to people all over the country, through your radio ministry and the internet, etc. Thanks for being on our program today. God bless.